Good morning, 834 at listener-supported KGNU. Peace in the family during the holidays and beyond. Our topic this morning on KGNU's quarterly conflict resolution call-in program. Holiday gatherings, some of them have happened, some of them are yet to come later this month, but always a time for family to get together and potentially a time for tension within the family. So that is our topic this morning, helping you navigate some of the holiday conflict that may occur. You know, we all have challenges at holiday family gatherings, the interactions, the expectations. What do we want to keep in mind? How do we create a season we can rejoice about in the new year rather than have a bunch of stress around the family getting together? That's what we'll talk about this morning. I'm Sam Fuqua. I'm joined as always with my co-host and co-producer of this quarterly series, Mary Zinn. She's with us by phone this morning. Hi, Mary.
Hi, good morning, and good morning to our guests as well. Thank you for being with us.
Yes, and we will open the phones later, as we always do, to invite the listeners into the conversation and share maybe some of the things they're struggling with or how they've overcome some potential challenges around conflict and family holiday gatherings. We're so pleased to have with us in the studio Beth Brown Ornstein, who is the founder of the Colorado Mediation Center in Boulder, an attorney and conflict resolution specialist. Beth, good morning. Welcome. We're glad to have you with us at KGNU.
Good morning to you and to Mary.
And Barry Erdman is back with us, licensed clinical social worker and therapist in private practice in Boulder. Barry, good to see you again. Thanks for being back.
Good morning, Sam and Mary and Beth. Glad to be here.
So before we go to the phones, let me just start with, I'm sure this has come up perhaps in your practice, probably definitely in your life and interaction with friends. Beth Ornstein, what is the sort of the most common thing people raise with you if they're sharing that family gathering is going to be tense or there might be conflict? What is it about?
I think lately it's been about politics and not knowing how to deal with people who have strongly held beliefs that are different than their own.
That would be near the top of the list. Barry, anything else come to top of mind for you or the people you interact with around this topic?
Well, you know, the holidays brings back past memories of family conflict or crises, and it's the anniversary dates that impact and complicate the holiday, the usual and customary holiday stuff that's there.
Old wounds, in fact.
Old wounds and past tragedies and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Mary?
Well, I'm thinking about how stressed we get and how tired we get. So what do we do to keep that from impacting us, but everybody else around us? We just get so frenzied and a little bit crazy, and it makes our world less peaceful, so we are not in our very best behaviors, I think.
Well, let's start with politics. Because that is, of course, one that there's been a couple of situations in extended family gatherings or gatherings with friends and acquaintances where I've just avoided the topic, Beth. That's one strategy.
That's a good strategy sometimes.
Yeah. What else do you advise if someone is just really pushing it? And
well, I think one thing that's always important to do is reflect on your own reaction to see if you're being triggered. And then I think it's always important just to take a minute to stop and breathe and think about what you can do and what your options are. And I think then you can evaluate what some of your options are. And one way might be to choose the strategy of avoiding and saying it's not really time. Or you might look around and say, is this the time to have this conversation? And think about if it is a good time, okay, I'm ready for it and get ready to have that conversation. Or to say, maybe this isn't a good time, maybe we could have another time to talk about this and set that up.
What if you're at a gathering and two other people are getting into it, heated political argument, and you're uncomfortable? Of course, you could just remove yourself from the room, I suppose. But what if it's making everybody else uncomfortable, but these two people just want to go at it because they're passionate about their views and they're not avoiding it?
So if you want to intervene,
yes,
then I, you know, I'm sure there are a number of ways of doing this, and I'm hoping that Barry will help save me and think of a few good ones. But one possibility, and Mary too, you have a lot of experience with this, but I think you can, first of all, you can only take responsibility for yourself and what you want to do. But if it's making you uncomfortable, you can say it's making you uncomfortable and ask if people might want to have that conversation elsewhere, or intervene and say, you know, you could change the subject and say, would you mind if I change the subject?
How about the Broncos?
Yeah, that's there's always the weather too.
Yeah, the weather. Yeah,
and there's a lot of that lately, so that brings up lots of opportunities. But it's really whatever feels comfortable that you feel comfortable saying yourself, or maybe you want to get into that conversation as well. It depends on the. If it's making other people uncomfortable, I think that's important to point it out and say, oh, I'd like to participate, but I'm thinking it's making other people uncomfortable. Could we talk about this elsewhere or at another time? Or if everybody's not uncomfortable, and say, I'm ready to join in and take a side.
Well, since we're discussing the topic of politics, I want to borrow a strategy that politicians use in this regard. Supposing the political arena they use this referred to pivot, the classic pivot. A politician is throwing a question, and instead of answering it, they switch to something they want to say. So let's use it in a positive context instead of avoidance. But let's imagine for a moment that there's a conflict going on between two family members. How can you begin to acknowledge and validate each of their person, not just their position, and begin to pivot to what you appreciate or feel grateful for in the fact that there's a family gathering or that there's this heated discussion going on? So you might join the conversation by saying something like, you know, I really appreciate the fact that you guys are so passionate about this issue that is so important to both of you and perhaps all of us. And so now you're joining the conversation, but what you're adding is not joining the conflict, but bringing some peacemaking by bringing something of positive attention to what's going on in the room. You may not change the topic. You may not necessarily want to be involved with the conflict, but by taking that deep breath and remaining present or connected to what's going on, but bringing something of positive value to the atmosphere, to the room, or to the gathering would be what I'd have to say.
And I totally agree with that. I do think there other ways of connecting to in a positive way, aside from just acknowledging what they're saying and how important it is to look at what's behind what they're saying. So I guess if we wanted to, if Donald Trump and Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer are all in the same family right now, we could say, oh, you know, so you really care about the security of our country. And, you know, maybe we're, you know, maybe we need to explore, I know, how we can preserve the security. And I don't think it would work so well with them, but one never knows.
Okay.
Mary, when you have sensitive political topics come up at your family gatherings, how do you handle that?
Well, we handle it in lots of different ways. First of all, we acknowledge that that's a trigger. You know, that for me, I can get really upset looking at the long-term consequences of what might be going on. And in the meantime, I want to maintain my relationship with the person I'm talking to. All of what Beth and Barry have said is so useful. I'm so glad you're both there at the studio today with us on this program. And when we go in with a sense of curiosity to find out more about what's going on with that other person and why they think it's important, rather than trying to convince them to our point of view, then we really learn what the other is thinking and how that's possible when it seems like such irrational thinking to us. Then we want to learn what experience brought that person to that conclusion. How is that possible? And that's true anytime, regardless of holidays or not, but Beth pointed out, is this the time to have these conversations? Or would I rather say to you, boy, this is really interesting to me to understand how you see that, but today I'd really like to enjoy the family. That's my priority for today, and I wonder if we could talk later about that.
We're talking about family conflicts that come up during the holidays and how we work through them, how we handle them, different strategies. Beth Hornstein and Barry Erdman are with us in the studio. Mary's in on the phone, and we invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a comment, you're preparing perhaps for a family gathering and are nervous about some aspect of it, or you just experienced one perhaps for Thanksgiving or Hanukkah and you'd like to share what happened, give us a call at 303-442-4242. Let me shift gears a bit, although certainly this can create political arguments, but what if you have someone in your family who really is struggling with an addiction problem, and they just drink too much or something else is happening there? What are the strategies there? Perhaps preparing in advance, knowing that, you know, your alcoholic uncle is going to be there, or if something just is getting out of hand in the moment around, you know, around alcohol abuse or some other substance. Barry?
Well, I want to answer your question, but also broaden the field, because the whole stress of the holidays has to do with anticipating what could happen. And in the things that throw us off is the negative or bad things that are going to happen, including someone overusing alcohol or drugs at the family gathering or just in general in their life, and you're kind of bothered by it. But just consider for a moment all the other fears and anxieties that could possibly be part of that scenario. For example, in addition to the conflict with politics and alcohol and drugs, there's also illness and death in the family, or loss and grief. Anticipating how we're going to have a pleasant experience when there's a loss or a recent death in the family, or divorce or mental illness related issues, some kind of hardship or suffering, or accidents or disabilities or financial crises. All of those kinds of topics are threats to a family gathering. So the first thing I would say is that that's not the time to try to cure or fix or change anything. If anything, we put the emphasis on how we can take advantage of the time that we have and strengthen rather than try to focus on the problem. So in that regard, the anticipation of all the problems is just a way of increasing the anxiety. And with the anxiety comes fear of the what-ifs. So everyone starts to have a case of the what-ifs in preparation for the event. So now, how do we deal with the what-ifs? What if someone drinks too much? What if someone is smoking too much pot or passing it around and changing the whole atmosphere of the event? To my mind, I want to borrow from Gerald Jampolsky and this old book called Love is Letting Go of Fear. And in this way, we think, well, if we're going to try to combat anxiety and fear, what's the way to change? And that would be to think about what we can do that turns on a positive approach. So with the title of Love Letting Go of Fear, we sprinkle in a little bit of Gary Chapman's five love languages. So we say, okay, now we have five universal kinds of strategies for developing the antidote to anxiety and fear. So in Gary Chapman's work, he talks about gift-giving as an expression of love. Well, during the holidays, we do a lot of that, or we anticipate a lot of gift-giving and trying to imagine what might help someone to feel good by giving them something they may appreciate. But in addition to that, there's quality time. How to take the short, brief, relatively short time that you have with these people and maximize the quality of the experience by acknowledging that this is an opportunity to go for a walk or to spend some time together in a positive way. The others of the five are words of affirmation, saying things that are positive, like, I'm really glad to see you, or you look nice, or I'm happy that you made the effort to come here today or to visit, that kind of thing. And the last two are acts of service, doing favors. Oh, can I help you in the kitchen? Or I heard you had a car problem. Let's go out and take a look and see if we can help. And the last is physical touch. I don't think there's anything that can replace a nice hug or an embrace or a warm handshake. So those kinds of practical five universal-like kind of love languages is a way that we make connections. And to my mind, that holiday is the appropriate time to strengthen connections and to be able to reinforce that which would make the contact between one and another meaningful. I'll pause there. I know that's a lot, but...
Well, I took notes. So, gifts, time, affirmation, favors, touch, five languages of love.
Right.
That's Barry Erdman. Beth Hornstein also with us. Mary Zinn on the phone. We're talking about how to manage conflicts around the holidays and family and friends and how we show up for these gatherings. Also talking about how we reduce stress around this time. 303-442-4242 is the number to call. We'd invite you to join the conversation. 303-442-4242. Beth, in listening to Barry, anything particularly jump out at you there?
A couple of things. One, I think in planning for the holidays or in anticipation of the holidays, it's helpful to reflect on intention. And so, as Barry said, the holidays aren't the time to try to cure someone of an issue, and your question was about addiction. But it is a time to reflect on why do you want to be with that person and why are you going? And I think mostly it does have to do with maintaining those connections and feeling love and wanting to be with people. So infusing yourself with that intention, I think, is helpful for going forward. And then maybe building some realistic expectations. And certainly if someone has an addiction issue that and it's caused problems in the past, that's probably going to happen again. But maybe it's time to think about, well, what did come up and what can be done to maybe mitigate that or to handle it so that if somebody was passing something around at the table, and if you have children available around and you don't want your children to be exposed, then maybe you need to do some advanced planning. Maybe it's talking to that person in advance, trying to establish some boundaries, maybe aligning with some siblings or other people in the family to come up with a strategy for dealing with things and establishing some boundaries in advance. And the more of that can be done, the better. Maybe it's time everybody says, oh, when this happens, let's just go take a walk. And a walk is maybe the best thing for everyone.
Yeah, and making a little bit of a plan then reduces your own anxiety that is occurring as you anticipate this problem.
Right? Yes.
Yeah.
Right. So much of the holidays is about planning ahead and not getting overstressed yourself so that you're not making good decisions. And I'm listening to what's being put out, and I'm thinking, do people, and I'm asking our listeners this, what do you do ahead of time? Do you decide, well, I won't serve any alcohol at the party I'm giving, or we don't need to have that if that puts Uncle Jim in a bad place? Because I might even tell him ahead of time, I'm concerned about that, and I think I just won't serve anything. So I wanted you to know that that's the kind of party I'd hope to have, or have that conversation privately ahead of time as a possibility. And also to have someone as your ally, someone perhaps you've talked to ahead of the gathering, to say, boy, I'm a little bit worried I'm going to lose it, so would you just back me up or be there for me to talk to, or we'll just give each other a look across the room and that'll make me more comfortable and I know I'll calm down. So I would ask our listeners, Sam, what do you do? What strategies do you use? And on the other hand, on the flip side of that, what strategies do you use to make it an incredibly meaningful holiday? So as you said earlier, that we can talk about it in 2019 and be really rejoicing about what we did do together instead of going back over what happened that we weren't happy about. So what do our listeners have in their pockets they might share with us?
Yeah, good question. So strategies for of dealing with potential conflict and strategies for making the holidays as meaningful as possible. 303-442-4242. Let me bring up another specific one because this has happened to me. It's when different sets of families come together with younger children and different parenting styles manifest, different behavior issues. Some kids behaving in ways that within, say, my family, we wouldn't let our own children behave. Just ride that out, Beth. It's, you know, it's just for this party, and so we'll just sort of grin and bear it. But these kids may be modeling behavior that we don't want our kids to adopt. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do, and I wish I had the magic bullet answer for that. But I think there has to be recognition of what the culture of the family is. And if you have experience from the past where the children in one family have been modeling behavior that you don't want for your own children, I think that is the time for an advanced discussion with a sibling, and or assuming that's who the other parents are, or whoever the other parents
right.
are, and to see if there's something that can be done, or talk to the other parents about if something happens, would they mind if you say something to their children? But it is an awkward situation. I've experienced that as well. I don't know, Barry, if you have any thoughts on that.
Well, perhaps each situation is going to be different, and so, in Sam, in your case, the conflict or the parenting issue that came up might be different than anyone else listening or what we're imagining right now. But a general strategy would be to separate the children and to regain a sense of authority with the kids, your own kids, rather than trying to control the whole situation. So pulling your children aside, going to another room, sitting down, letting them calm down, and talking to them, not in a punitive way, but to reinforce the behavior that you want to have happen, is the best you can do. If you don't have control of the whole environment, you still have a way of reengaging your kids.
And it is a learning opportunity for your own children that to have a conversation about this is what your cousins were doing or other family members, and this is why we don't do it that way.
We're at 303-442-4242. If you'd like to join our conversation, share some strategies you have for potential warding off or dealing with conflict around the holidays and strategies for making it meaningful. Let's hear from David in Boulder. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hey there. Thanks so much for this great conversation. This is David with Goose Creek Community Land Trust, and I love your guys' advice a little bit more on the engaging with, you know, folks who have a different political view than you might have. You know, housing is a big one here in Boulder. People are very convinced, like I am, you know, hooray for our side. I've got the right approach. But other people have really, you know, very valid concerns. Some people are afraid about adding housing and adding people and pollution and congestion and noise. And other people see we have to add housing, permanently affordable housing, for a broad range of people to be a diverse and viable society. So we're all real convinced of our rectitude, but we can't really move forward unless we listen and work together. So what advice would you have for us?
Well, David, thanks for that question, and I'm sure it's a topic that could come up at a holiday gathering to loop it back
absolutely.
Into what we're talking about.
I'll take it offline.
Thanks a lot, David. Who would like to take that first?
Well, there's an old therapist trick. Any of my colleagues listening in right now will know this immediately, is when you don't know what to say, you can always ask. Like, oh, that's a really interesting point. Can you tell me more about that? And so by inquiring and asking them to clarify their position, or even challenging them to explain further what they're trying to say, is still a way of connecting and engaging. And then you want to add some validation into that to be able to say, well, that's really interesting. I hadn't really considered your point of view before, and I can see where that's really important to you. And I wonder if you would be interested to hear what I have to say about that. So now you're building a bridge from validating the person, helping them to feel like they're being heard, and then asking or inviting or welcoming the other person to hear what you have to say. So you sort of take the lead and set the example first rather than interrupting or telling them they're wrong or they don't know what they're talking about or, you know, I can't stand listening to you because you don't make any sense. Those kinds of criticisms and negativity doesn't create the kind of conversation that's going to lead anywhere.
All of that is exactly what I would have liked to have said. I think that, but I think you do want to avoid putting the other person on the defensive. You definitely want to join them in conversation if you can. Sure ways to put people on the defensive or to make assumptions about why they're saying what they're saying, to judge them for what they're saying or to blame them for what they're doing. So if you can avoid doing that in your conversation, that's the best approach. And I agree that the best way to do that is to ask questions and, be genuinely curious. If you are, I mean, if you're not curious, then it's not worth pursuing that conversation. But I think that's, I think that's important to think about an intention. Do I want to understand? And if you want to understand the other person, how will you understand them without seeking clarity and asking questions?
And that's Beth Ornstein. Barry Erdman also with us in the studio. Mary Zinn has joined us by phone as we talk about difficult conversations, challenging behaviors, some of the things we encounter around the holidays, but also year-round. It's KGNU's quarterly conflict resolution call-in program, and you are in tune with listener-supported KGNU Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. 1 minute after 9 o'clock, the phone number to join the conversation is 303-442-4242. That's 303-442-4242, and we'd love to hear from you. What are you dealing with? What have you successfully used as a strategy to handle some of these issues, whether it's been during the holidays or not? Of course, these are potentially year-round problems, many of them. But one that I want to come back to something Barry said that comes up particularly around the holidays, when you were talking about the five languages of love, one of them was gifts, giving gifts. This also, yes, well, it's a loving gesture. It's a point of stress for many people. And that could be, am I going to choose the right gift for this person? Are they going to like it? There's an expectation I'm going to spend some serious money here and I can't maybe really afford that. And then, you know, I've seen issues in families where, you know, there are different levels of resources. And so some relatives bring the really expensive presents and others don't. And there's feelings there of inadequacy among the folks who couldn't afford the nicer presents. So gift giving, while it is a gesture of love, is also somewhat fraught, Barry. Would you agree? Or can be?
It's loaded, certainly, yeah. Because of all the things you just described. So that's why I was laying out the alternatives. I mean, maybe in one person's background, the way that they were shown love was because their parents bought them expensive gifts. And so now that's their orientation and they think that that's what's going to make other people feel loved. But when you think about all the four other categories, that may be more how the other people appreciate things. They don't necessarily want or value gifts in the same way. Their material possessions are not something they focus on in their life because they can't afford it. So giving a gift of a neck massage or giving a gift of
favor or time or yeah, one of these other
The quality time and you know, we're going to go out for coffee next week, or you know, I'll treat you to a lunch, or that's emphasizing the relationship and the connection rather than the material aspect of exchanging a gift. And in a moment's notice, the wrapping paper is on the floor, and the gift may be remembered or forgotten in a day or a week from then, and don't remember who gave it to you. And so,
I think that's a great alternative, but there has to be some work to build an expectation for that within the family to know or to start that tradition, I think. I think that's helpful in the planning. I know those ideas of alternative gifts are great. I know other large family groups, as the families expand, draw names for gifts, or there might be dollar limits on the amount of the actual gift. So,
or the white elephant tradition of giving things nobody wants.
Right. Obviously. I like that one.
Yeah. Mary Zinn, what strategies do you employ in your family, perhaps? Or do you have any comments on the gift part of this?
I do, Sam. Thanks. One of the things that I received this year that was so precious, along with what is being discussed in the studio, is my grandson gave me coupons. And it's valid, for example, one meal with a sleepover, or fixing something, or a game of Scrabble. I'm literally reading his coupons as I say this. And he's going to clean something up, or he's going to do some paper shredding for me, or cook one of my favorite dishes. So he has given me these coupons that I can redeem. Now, I will say that some of them have expiration dates. I'm just pointing that out. However, it's 2020, so I think I'm in good shape. One of them is 2025, so I know I'm going to be okay with that. But he went to the trouble to make these little coupons that are meaningful to me. And our family has gone more and more toward activities together. This year we pitched in together to do something very special that all of us happened to be in the same city at the same time and we could do, and that was our gift to each other. So we made it that. It was expensive, so we all pitched in together to make it happen. And another question that comes up for me around the gift giving is, does that distract from the religious aspects of the holiday? And do we get judgmental or resentful about people who focus on gifts and the symbols, the Santa or the presents or whatever it is, that isn't really about the underlying piece of the holiday? How much do we start to judge other people and be critical of them?
Good question. We put that to our listeners if you'd like to respond and join the conversation. 303-442-4242, 303-442-4242. What are your strategies around gift giving, and how do you feel about that aspect of the holidays? I'll just share that in my family, the last few years, as you know, the kids are all in their 20s, my sister's kids are in their 20s, we started doing essentially a book exchange. And my sister has, it's an Icelandic tradition, and there's a Icelandic word for it that I'm not recalling right now, but everybody brings a book or two, puts it in a big pile, and then you sort of start picking books. People talk about why they wanted to contribute that book. Maybe they felt it was for a specific person, but usually it's just everybody sort of choosing books out of this big pile. And, you know, they could be new, could be used. It's not an expensive gift-giving approach, but it is, of course, encouraging reading and sharing about books that are meaningful to us. So
that's so creative.
Kind of
that's
book exchange.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So put that one out there, and would love to hear from listeners if you have other ideas on that piece of it. 303-442-4242. Mary, it was interesting you talked about the religious aspect of that, and that's often the furthest thing from our minds, you know. I think it's interesting that, I mean, many of us, you may have grown up with religion, but now are more secular or never experienced it. And it's really more about coming together as family. Maybe it's about gifts. Maybe it's about time off. But it's not that often, at least in my observation, that much about faith. No.
Right. And I get the impression that some of the folks who hold it as a deeply religious time of year for them are critical of others, and we are critical generally of people who aren't doing it the way we're doing it, because we think the way we're doing it is right. You know, that makes sense to us. So it's so easy to be judgmental and be critical of others, and this may be more of a self-regulating peace strategy that I don't want to be judged or to be spending my holiday time or any time worrying about or critical of what other people are doing. I need to just focus on and model what I think is important in this world.
I think the religious aspect can bring up a lot of conflict, and mainly because different family members or whoever sharing, you know, typically being a family, are not observing in the same way or want to observe in a different way. And I think that one approach to that is to separate the time so that the time together is the communal celebratory time, and then there's separate time cut out for the religious observance, if that can be done. Now, if, you know, we're talking primarily about Christmas now, and Hanukkah has just passed. That would be, it's not a, there's not a lot of religious observance around that holiday, but there are other holidays in the year, say Easter, Passover, where that might become more of an issue.
Different times and different observances in each part of the family. So perhaps the thing to do is to share what you hold important and encourage others to join you. If you're the host, for example, of something, that you do it the way that works for you, and you make sure that that is included. This year in our Thanksgiving observance, we talked about what this day must be like for indigenous peoples. So it was really a little bit of a different twist on Thanksgiving. How is that for people who are not celebrating what we're doing today? And has it become more about Thanksgiving than it has been, meaning giving thanks, gratitude, than it is about the early settlers and their relationship with indigenous people? So we just brought that different aspect out, and I thought it was really healthy for the entire family to have an awareness.
We're talking about how we celebrate the holidays, some of the conflicts or stress points that come up, and how we deal with them this morning on KGNU, 303-442-4242. We'd love to hear your comments or questions, 303-442-4242. What do you hold around the holidays? What is most important for you? What do you most want around this time? 303-442-4242 is the number. And since a lot of this is coming back to one of Barry's original points about stress and how we manage stress, let's talk some about that. Just, it doesn't necessarily have to be specific to the holidays, but, you know, stress management techniques that we can employ now and year round. And I know a lot of us are thinking about this in our lives generally. You know, for me, I've been trying to focus more on breathing and what is the appropriate type of breathing for reducing stress levels. What comes top of mind for you, Beth?
Well, since you're saying breathing, yes, absolutely. And I think taking deep breaths is good. If you have a meditation practice, that certainly features prominently in that practice. But I was listening to Mary and talking about Thanksgiving and gratitude. And I think around the holidays, most of them will relate in some way to gratitude in different ways that people want to express it. And I think a personal gratitude practice is also helpful. Being aware of your intention and what you're grateful for will help focus on where you want to be and how you want to be in your dealings with others.
Barry?
Well, stress is a big topic, but I like to sort of simplify it and break it down into two kinds of stress, the physical stress and the mental stress, or the what goes on in your body and what goes on in your head, to make it even more simple. So the taking the breath, taking a deep breath, is a way of getting out of the fight, flight, freeze threat response, where your adrenaline and cortisol in your body is now released and taking over your ability to function in physiologically. By breathing and taking a full belly breath, it shuts down the cortisol and the adrenaline. So on the physiological level, that's the direct, short, quick, dirty, direct intervention for calming the nervous system. The mental stress is what's going on in your thinking. And if it's anticipatory, thinking about what's coming up, anxiety, then you're thinking in the future. If you're reflecting on some event in the past that worries you, then you're thinking about the past. So the way to realign and correct your mental stress to some state of okayness or relaxation is to refocus your attention in the present, is to take a moment to check in with your five senses. What am I seeing, hearing, tasting, smelling? And the last one, Sam's counting on his fingers.
Seeing.
Okay. By going to the sense organs and the sense doors and just noticing what's coming through your senses in that moment is the present moment. And in that way, your thinking now can align with what you're actually experiencing in the present rather than reflecting future or past. So those two techniques are ones that I recite often in my practice to people, and I practice it myself all the time. When you come to a stoplight, 13 to 22 seconds approximately, there's nothing going on in your life, that's a good time to check in with yourself and take a deep breath and notice the bugs on the windshield instead of looking through the windshield. Feel your feet on the brake pedal, your hands on the steering wheel. It's a simple little exercise, but how often we're not there. We don't really show up where we are, where we're experiencing our life.
In a stressful situation, it is important to notice how your body is reacting, because that will give you a clue as to what else is going on. If your stomach is tightening or your head is hurting, it's hard to breathe, that's all the more reason to breathe and say, well, what's going on? What's triggering this? Maybe I can think about this or stop and do something about it. I think other things that people do regularly and to decrease the stress, exercise, being with pets,
thank you for both of those. I'm a fan of both of those too.
Yeah.
That was about making the time to exercise and to be with your pets and all those other things. Mary, do you have any specific techniques that we haven't talked about yet?
Well, I'm thinking in first of all, I'm so grateful for the comments, Barry and Beth. Thank you so much for what you're offering today. So I'm taking it all in and thinking, I can do this. I can make this happen. This is going to work. And I'm thinking also that the slowing down, that business of breathing or being present, and then I think back to, well, what were my expectations? What did I think ahead to what might happen? And then I can use those techniques if it goes awry. If it doesn't go the way I expected it to be or things are a little out of hand, I can bring myself back to a better place. Having the expectation about what I can manage and what I can do well, that is realistic, instead of taking on way too much in a short period of time and then not perhaps having the time to go to the gym or to get the exercise I need in order to keep me mentally in a good place is counterproductive. So how do I know what my expectations of myself and perhaps of others is, what's that about, and what do I need to put in place to keep that in something manageable, to make it something manageable that it can really make happen.
Mm-hmm. We're at 303-442-4242. Got time to take another call or two if you'd like to join the conversation about how you're managing around the holidays and what you're struggling with or what strategies you employ to make it a meaningful time of year with you, your friends, your loved ones. 303-442-4242. So let me,
Sam,
yes.
I had another question, something Barry referred to earlier, and that has to do with people who have had a loss this year. I have a dear friend who lost her daughter this year, and it's going to be a very hard holiday season for her. And I'm just wondering about what we can do to help, to be there for the folks who are watching everybody supposedly having a fabulous time with no cares in the world and having this deep hurt care with them at during this time.
Sam is pointing to me.
I have a suggestion.
We're not going to try to cure anyone's grief, and nor should we try to. Everyone has their own process and what they may be going through. I think in each case there needs to be a consideration of whether to address it and provide a place or a space to acknowledge the deceased, an empty chair at the table, or a conversation about, you know, what is this like? How is this meaningful to you? What do you remember about the holiday when the person was alive? Or just be able to politely go on, but not try to make believe that the person should be feeling the same way as you. That's an unrealistic expectation, I think. Beth, what were you going to say?
I think this is another opportunity for planning. And if it's a shared loss in the family, then that, I guess in that way it's easier because people will want to address it. But I think it's worth talking about in advance to say, this has gone on, share ideas, you know, how would this work? And then it can be something to look forward to and share memories, for instance, or have a specific time or the empty chair. Those are both good ideas. Sam was talking about the book exchange that he had. Maybe it's something where everybody brings an item or something that reminds them of the person who's lost.
Is that helpful, Mary?
Well, it is helpful, and what I'm knowing from watching people react is to acknowledge it rather than ignore it, that when we've been at the table, at least to talk or say in the blessing or somewhere along the way, that we have people who can't be with us, who aren't with us this year, and how much we miss them, and to just not let that be the elephant in the room.
Let's take another call. This is Adino in Denver. Adino, hi, you're on the air.
Hi there, how are you doing?
Good morning.
Good morning. I want to speak to the issue that you were just talking about, and then I want to talk about these parties. We recently lost our mother, and what we did was some of the clothes that we were going to give away, I kept and I made scarves. And so at Thanksgiving time, we asked the girls wore something that I made that my mother wore, and we all brought it to the dinner. We all wore it to the dinner. And then we brought a little saying that my mother would always use from day to day so that we had her memories there. But we didn't bring up any of the sorrows or that she had passed or whatever. We just enjoyed the fact that what we were wearing was something that she enjoyed wearing, and she was embracing us through what she used to wear. And the words that she, the really wonderful, encouraging words that she used to share with her children. And we didn't bring the fact that she wasn't there, you know, to the table. So we celebrated, her kind of being there, her presence being there, you know, through the memories. And then what I used to do with parties, and I used to give really big parties, I had an agenda, and when I sent out my invitations or I called them on the phone, I let them know what the time frame of the party was going to be and that, you know, we were going to, that there was going to be like a special event for gifts, and there would be singing and then a little prayer, a little time for like a prayer, a blanket prayer for everybody, you know, to pray for peace and things like that. And then music. Those things were already pre-laid out, so they knew what to expect. And I let them know in general what the meal was going to entail, the food that would be around the area so that they could do finger food and things like that. If there was no alcohol served, then I told them, no, it was just going to be punch. And that way they know what to expect. There's a time frame on the party. I always let them know that I put the time frame on the party because I wanted to respect their time with other people or their office parties or other family members and so on and so forth. And I always had my parties way ahead of time so there would be no conflict with other holiday festivities.
We'll hire you.
Yeah. Pardon me?
Oh, she said you're hired. We have a great party planning, and we appreciate you sharing that. And also thanks for sharing that the way that you recognized your mom. I thought that was very sounded very good and meaningful. So thanks for sharing this morning, Adino, and have a happy holiday.
Yes, happy holiday to all the listeners and especially those who work so hard at KGNU.
Well, I think that was a great sort of way to wind down the program here. We have just a couple of minutes left. Let me ask both of our guests, is there anything that didn't come up or that you'd like to make sure we share with the listeners? Anything that you'd like to return to as part of our conversation?
I liked Beth's emphasis on anticipating and planning and maybe having a discussion beforehand. And if you have a spouse and you're concerned about the being pulled away from each other because of the different relatives that are there or the different events, to sit down beforehand and say, look, no matter what happens, we're connected. Or, you know, let's wink across the room or I'll give you a thumbs up when Uncle John is getting drunk. Or so you sort of set the intention of, like, no matter what happens, we're in this together. And rather than allowing the crisis of the event to pull you apart, because in the long run, you want to be able to say, well, wasn't that something? Or in no matter what happened.
Yeah.
And you sort of share the credit and the disaster and the pluses and minuses of what happened.
Yeah, I think it's important for spouses to find a way not to be torn apart by the event. And so the planning, as much as I've been saying, yes, planning is really good and helpful. Lately, I've really been trying to push myself to say, my intention is to be open to whatever comes up and to enjoy what people bring. And I think try to accept each person for what they bring. And even though they may be different, have different strengths or weaknesses than me, I want to appreciate that and be grateful for it.
And the one thing I'm thinking of doing this year is something, I'm still wondering how to do it, but I think it's harder nowadays to be present because of these little computers we have that are called our smartphones. And so often, you know, and this is year round, right, when people are dining out or at any event, people are drawn to be checking that and interacting with that rather than interacting with the humans in front of them. So I'm trying to plan ahead for my family gathering to see if there's a way to message that maybe there are times when we're together that we just want to agree to, you know, put the phones away, turn off the phones.
I think that's an excellent idea. I can just imagine Alexa and all the Siri phones talking to each other in the corner.
Having their own party.
Yeah.
Yes, just give them a place to do that. That would be wonderful.
Yeah. Well, if Dino was planning our party, she would say that we're going to have a certain amount of time where phones are not allowed. And I think that would be a good practice.
And Mary, do you have any final comments?
Yes. Well, I just want to say how grateful, again, Sam, I am to you, KGNU, and to Barry and to Beth this morning. I have so many things to think about, and certainly putting away devices is right at the top of the list. So I'm thinking that when we get into conversations, it's so important to remember why we want to be with that person. What's important to us about that person and each family member and how much we value that relationship? So that's the most important, highest value when we're together. We can reap the benefits of being with the folks we love.
So I believe I'm going to focus on how valuable and meaningful, important, and precious the people in my life are, and keep that the focus.
Well, thank you so much, Mary Zinn, and have a great holiday.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful, wonderful holiday season and a happy, joyful new year.
Mary Zinn is with Zinn Mediation Associates, co-host and co-producer of this quarterly series of conflict resolution call-in programs here on KGNU. Really want to thank our in-studio guests, Beth Brown Ornstein, who founded the Colorado Mediation Center here in Boulder, an attorney and conflict resolution specialist. Beth, if people wanted to get a hold of you, can you recommend a way they do that?
Yes, they could go to my website, which is ColoradoMediationCenter.com.
ColoradoMediationCenter.com. My friend Barry Erdman, a longtime Boulder therapist, thank you for being with us again, Barry.
Most welcome. Glad to be here again, Sam.
And if people would like to get a hold of you?
BoulderTherapist.com.
BoulderTherapist.com. There you have it, folks. It's 9:30 at listener-supported KGNU. Thanks for listening. Thanks to the folks who called in, and thanks to Kathy for handling the phones. You do want to stay tuned. The Morning Sound Alternative is just ahead.